Sonny had such a good time telling stories to all of you last Saturday, if you were here. He texted me the next morning and said, let's do that again. Let's do it every week. So Sonny's going to call in at 4 and talk about whatever we feel like talking about, whatever questions you can throw up to me in the, that didn't sound right. Don't throw them up to me. Just type them in the chat room. Whatever questions you can type in the chat room for me to ask Sonny, we'll talk about it. And we'll talk about whatever he wants to talk about. If you remember last Saturday, we left Sonny on the side of the road on the interstate in Louisville in his Toyota Prius. And I can tell you that he made it back home. But we'll talk to him about whatever. I'm going to talk to him about the six-string banjo that he sort of developed and used for a while and some other issues too. But that, for some reason, that always strikes me as an interesting story. All right, I found Sonny. Sonny Osborne, how you doing?
Everything I can. I apologize for not calling when I was supposed to, but I lost my telephone. Well, and I don't know where it is. I have no idea where it is.
We already said we weren't going to tell about that, and you already told on yourself, so there you go.
any noise... like a phone ringing or anything like that. If you just walk in a room when I'm sitting there, I'll jump a foot. And so I keep the ringer turned off on it. And it's just on that vibrate. And so if you were to call the number to try to find it, you wouldn't hear it anyway. So,
well, I can't help you out then.
Well-known creek without that well-known paddle.
Well, then you told me you were also out there watching the Little League Baseball still, huh?
Oh, yeah, on TV. The Goodlettsville, which is right outside Nashville, which is, 7 miles, I guess, from Hendersonville. And Bobby's great-grandson is playing on that team. I don't know what he is to me, grandnephew or great-grandnephew or something like that, but he's played on that team, and I've really grown to like these little boys. They're a good team, there's good chemistry, and they really work for one cause, and that's to win.
Well, and you know, they do fundamentals. They hit the cutoff, man. They know what they're doing. They lay down a bunt when they got to get a run across.
Yeah, they sure do. Mm-hmm. Well, they're playing California right now.
Now they
for the United States Championship, and there's something that I don't understand. We go into this final game unbeaten. I say we, Goodlettsville and Tennessee.
Right.
We go into it unbeaten. We've won two or three games, and we're unbeaten. We've beaten California already.
Yeah.
So they're in the losers bracket, and they come up, and today is the championship game. They've got one loss, and we've got none, and we've beaten them one time. Yet, if they win today, they're the United States champions. Well, I don't understand that.
I read that online a little bit this morning. I was trying to catch up on what was going on, and I knew that Goodlettsville beat them, and now they're writing that California's kind of on a roll.
Yeah, they are. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I really don't understand that. Usually when it's a double elimination and there's a team with a loss like that, then it has to beat the team with no losses twice in order to claim the championship. But it's not so in this case.
So,
and I don't understand how that scheduling came up, that got to be. So anyway.
Well, all right. Well, we'll let you get back to your game here in a little bit. I'm glad that you had a chance to call in.
No. I've got tape machines and video machines and all that stuff all over this house. So.
Hey, I have a couple questions for you that come up over the week, and some people ask questions for me to ask you, and one of them came up, I think, earlier in the week, asking about the six-string banjo. How and why did you come up with that, and what did you do with it, and what were you thinking?
We had a song called Listen to the Rain, and in order to play that song right, you play the first part of it, and then when you go to a four chord, well, let's say you're playing in G, it would be G to a C, you would have to just do some funky lick or some thing. It meant nothing to the tune to get out of that chord. And this song had a low C note in it. And so I got to thinking that why not get a banjo neck made with that six string on it, and you could put that low note on it. And so I had a guy in Charlotte, C.E. Ward is his name. He made the first six-string neck, and I was playing a Vigo Sonny Osborne model banjo at that time, and I had him make it identical to that five-string neck for the reason that if I couldn't play it or if it didn't work, I could go back to the five-string neck and nobody would ever know it.
Oh,
so
okay.
That was the reason for that. But
well, you played it for a while.
He gave me the neck on a Sunday, I think. We stopped by Charlotte, and he gave me the neck, and Dale Sled and I put it on that Vika banjo, and we recorded this Into the Rain then. I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday. I'd had it on there a day or two when we recorded that song, and it just worked perfect. I mean, you hit that C note, and you've got that string there. But in the process, bridge spacing it with the sixth extra string on there is wider, and so that makes your hand have to stretch out a little bit wider. And I played that thing, oh, I don't know, 6 or 7 years or something like that, and then I went back to the five string because I became repetitious in that I ran out of things I could do with that. The six-string neck, and so six-string banjo. So I went back to the five-string, and in doing that, I guess, I don't know what it is, I never got the speed back in my right hand that I had on the five-string before I started playing the six-string. So that was the downside. But the good side is that there's a lot of people now playing a six-string banjo.
Well, there are, and we're not talking about what passes today as that guitar banjo that a lot of country players. You're talking about a five-string with an extra fourth string.
Oh, yeah. Taylor Swift plays a six-string guitar banjo.
Right.
Did you know that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've seen her do it.
Yeah. But anyway, a guy named, the first one of those I ever saw was a guy named Lazy Jim Day, and he played on the Opry, in the early to mid-50s, a comedian, and he played one of those with his fingers, and it was a guitar with a banjo with a guitar neck in it, six string. But this one had the, just like a regular peg head, it had the first and second tuners in their regular place, and the third string was about in the middle of the peg head. And then the fourth string was where the old third string was, and the new string was in where the old fourth string was.
Really?
And yeah, with the five string, the fifth string then up where it normally is, the short string.
So the neck wasn't any wider?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, it was. Okay, I was going, okay.
It had
I got
to be,
lost.
Yeah.
That's what
it
I
had
thought.
To be wider to make the space for the extra string.
Now, when you were playing that six-string banjo, did you played that, and obviously you carried it on stage with you when you were using it, right?
Oh, that's all I played.
And you played.
I didn't play anything else.
And you played all the other tunes that you normally played on that same banjo. You just didn't use that extra string.
Uh-huh. Mm. Sure did. And recorded several things with it. Tennessee Stud was interesting. That we that's a song, by the way, not just Sky or nothing.
Oh, I know.
Anyway.
It's not an autobiographical song, is what you're saying.
No, it's not a biographical song. No, not hardly.
Right.
And but anyway, when we recorded that, if I could think how I learned to not just normally you use your thumb on the second, third, fourth, and fifth strings of a banjo. In that case, sixth string.
Right.
And the middle finger then is only on the first string. And your index finger then would be the second, third string only.
Right.
And so I learned to play and use the second for the first string. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yes, sir.
With my middle finger, I would play the second, and then that would become the first string. Well, on Tennessee Stud, I think I only hit the first string on that song one time, the regular first, and all of it, I called it the inside strings, or whatever you want to call it. But it was kind of interesting, because I don't think anybody who played the banjo had ever done that, and I learned that from Buddy Emmons, being around him a lot, the steel guitar player.
Yeah.
Because a steel guitar player plays that way, and they use their hand on all the strings. And so I learned how to do that, and it's kind of interesting.
Were both of the wound strings the same weight?
No. Let's see, what did I use? I used 11, 12, 13, and 20, and then that other string was like a 20, what was that, a 24, I think, or something like that, 25 maybe.
Wow.
And then, of course, the little string was 11 again.
25 is like a telephone cable.
Yeah, it was pretty big. It was pretty, because it had to be in order to give that deeper, wider, deeper sound.
Yeah.
And so, it was interesting. I mean, I enjoyed doing it for the time that we did it. I had an electric, too. That banjo was electric. And I enjoyed doing it. But then, just like I said, it ran its course. And I went back to the old five-string.
And you really felt like there was a difference in your speed after playing that six-string?
Oh, it did. It most certainly did. Hmm. The speed of my right hand was, I'd say probably 70-75% of what it was before I started playing the six string.
Huh.
It definitely made a difference, though.
Wow.
Now, I'm not saying it would on everybody, but it did on me.
Yeah.
I'll put it that way.
How long did it take you, once you figured out what you wanted to do as far as getting that extra low note, how long did it take you to be able to record or play with it, perform with it?
Oh, 2 days. I knew exactly what I wanted to do when I told him to make the thing. I knew exactly what I wanted to do, and I knew what it would take to do it. It was just getting used to not hit that string was the important thing. Not that you hit it too much, but to not hit it. And just play regular five string, and then when you needed it, it was there.
I can't imagine that.
It didn't take any time at all. I mean, and just like I said, I put that deck on there on Sunday, and I think we recorded Listen to the Rain with that six string on there on Tuesday. So it was a day is
wow.
all it took. But
wow.
I already knew what I could do with it, and so I did it.
But it's kind of like that story that I've heard you tell before about you were kind of figuring out how to play a banjo before you had one. I guess you could visualize it.
Yeah. It just, I don't know. I think I've got a banjo mentality, if you can call it that.
Well,
banjo music, I can see it in lines. It's just like lines of, I mean, roll patterns that you do. I know what I'm going to do, and I don't have to think about it, but I can visualize that whole line of where I'm supposed to be in my roll pattern when the next line starts. Does that make sense to you?
It does make sense to me because,
okay.
As you know, I play with a banjo sometimes for fun.
Yeah.
But I know the story of this, but tell the other listeners out there about when you learned how to play the banjo, that you'd kind of figured out some fingering before you actually had your hands on one.
Well, yeah, I knew. I wanted to play the banjo, and I talked my dad to get me one, and they ordered the thing. And I've been listening to the Stanley Brothers record of We'll Be Sweethearts in Heaven. And in that tune, Ralph Stanley takes this very simple break. I mean, just really simple break.
That's unusual for him.
I kind of knew what was happening there and which strings he was hitting. And I would sit in school, like in study hall, I'd have the book up like I was studying, you know. And I'd be working it out. And I knew what strings he was hitting. I don't know how, but I knew it. I knew that. And when I got the banjo, it was just as simple. I just had to apply, get used to the picks, and then apply what I already knew. I knew where the strings were and what notes and how to hit it and all that stuff. It was just simple for me to do, and I've said that a lot of times. The banjo was just the easiest thing that I ever tried to do. It was like walking or anything like that. I just could play.
Interesting.
I mean, it was just not a hard thing for me to do. And I think the first day I got the banjo, I played Cripple Creek, and that tune that Ralph did wasn't the only tune that I visualized playing. The Cripple Creek was one of them. And I mean, it wasn't good, but you could tell what I was playing.
So you hadn't even had a banjo yet that you could sit and play, and you were just
out? No. It was like, that happened like 3 weeks or so before I got the banjo. They ordered the banjo, which was a K, the cheapest thing. I think the whole thing was $100, and I think my dad had $20 deposit on that thing, and then I went to the teacher, and he was going to teach me how to play it, and he called my dad, and he said, I can't teach him anything. He already knows more than I do, and I know that sounds big-headed, but if you know me, you know I'm not big-headed,
right.
So, but that's what happened, and they gave him, I think, some money back on the banjo, and I kept the banjo, and I don't know how much he finally wound up in it, having in it. You know what? I've really tried to think. I don't know what happened to that banjo. I just don't know. I don't know what happened to it.
Well, I didn't have as much.
It was just the easiest thing in the world for me to learn to play.
You know, I think everybody started on a K, didn't they? I know that was my first. Not that I've gotten anywhere with it, but the first one I had right out of college was a K. I guess they're everybody's starter.
Well, it was K or Bacon and Bay made them back then in the 50s. This was just the cheapest thing you could get.
That's action was 2 inches high.
I'm sorry?
The action on mine was 2 inches high. I didn't know any better.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That was way, way up there. And who knew?
Who knew?
Know any better. If you'd asked me to step that down, I don't know what I was going to take the bridge off of it, I guess.
Hey, is that are you playing that six string on that live version in Germany of Listening to the Rain, do you think?
No.
All right.
No, that's I think I borrowed Blake Williams' Granada on that. Well, now, you mean that live CD that we did from Germany?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that was, I think that's Blake Williams' Granada that I borrowed on that.
Okay.
And then on the YouTube thing was made in Sweden, I played a Stelling on that. And Jeff made a Stelling for me called the Sunflower, S-O-N-F-L-O-W-E-R.
That's right.
And I never could get it in tune. I just could not tune that banjo. And I gave it back to him. And I never could tune it. It would, you could tune that banjo and just stand there and hit it like that, and you could hear it go out of tune. I don't know what it was about it. It was something to do with the fingerboard. He would use something, I think they called it ebonite. Mm. It was plastic and ebony. And I think they used ebonite in it. And the weather, just 2 or 3 degrees would change the fingerboard around.
Well, and of course, you went through that transition from the calfskin heads to the plastic head, right?
I did. I sure did. Yeah, I did. You just have no idea. If you didn't live through it, you have no idea what a pain that skin head was. I mean, you had to work on it every day. Every day, you had to work on it. I'm not talking about every other day. I'm talking you had to spend time with it every day, every day.
Did I hear you once tell a story about having to put a light bulb behind it or somehow to kind of?
A lot of the guys did. I never did. I always used a hairdryer.
Hairdryer.
On mine. Or either, and we traveled in cars back then, and you would lay the banjo up in the window. so where the sun could get to it if it had been raining and it would dry. But you had to be careful because if it got too hot, it would break. It would just crack. Mm. I've had them break right on stage, just like that, and the head be split all the way across. I've heard them break in the case, and it'd be like a gun go off, you know, pow.
Mm. So when you got the
plastic, that plastic head, that was just really, that was gifts from heaven right there.
Well, as soon as you got the plastic head, you knew that was going to work then, right?
Oh yeah, it was a different sound. It was more, it was not the same sound, and it's not right now. If you could get a good skin head and put on a banjo right now, you'd hear more of the sound of the banjo, but you had to work harder to get it set up like that. The setup with a skin head, you had to thin the bridge, the ebony part of a maple ebony bridge, had to thin the top of that down almost razor thin. And then you lower the tail piece right down almost on the head to get away from that hollow, mushy sound. And I've seen people put towels in the back of one, pie plates, different things. But then with the plastic head, you just tied it, it would stay the same. It would always be the same. Mm. So, and that was a really thing. And then the expense of the heads. The last skin head I bought was a Roger 3-star, and I think it was $24 or something like that. And this was, would be in 1961, I guess, 60 or 61. And $24 in 1961 was a far cry from what it is now.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be more like $60 or $65 or $70 now.
Is anybody playing? You think anybody's playing today in the bluegrass style with a cat with the old calfskin head?
I don't know where you could get one.
Hmm.
I don't. I just don't know where you could get one with the consistency of that of the Rogers head. Was very, very good. It was different. And then you could get cheaper heads, but they were grainy, and they'd have bad spots in them. But the Rogers head was just the consistency of that head was good. Mm. Was very good.
Mm.
And I don't know if anybody's making that head nowadays, or one like that.
Mm.
Because everybody uses the plastic because it's just no trouble. I think the first time Earl, I saw him, he had that plastic head. He said, "Boys, feller gets one of them, he'd never have to buy another, would he?" And that was probably 1961 or 60 or 61, something
wow.
like that.
Wow.
And that's about the truth.
That's amazing. That's
about
amazing.
The truth.
Hey, they're going to shut me down here at 5 or so is when my time ends up. Can you call back next week and we'll pick up something else?
Oh,
maybe?
Listen, I want to every week.
Okay.
But I apologize because I knew it was time to call, but I couldn't call because I didn't have no phone.
Well, that makes
and
it
then,
hard.
And then I couldn't find your number.
Finding the phone is the key, and then the number we can find because that's in there somewhere. But finding the tie it around your neck or something if you want. Or...
I know. I usually don't do that. It's always in my pocket. That telephone, I never leave my pocket. I never go anywhere without it because of health issues and stuff
well,
like
sure.
that. It's sure not there this time.
Well, I was a little concerned about you when I didn't hear from you, and I'm just glad that you were able to call in. That's all.
Well, I'm glad I got in a little while anyway,
right.
And this won't be a normal thing, I mean, for me to forget like that, because I usually don't.
Hey, tune in next week if Bobby's great-grandson isn't playing ball. Charlie Cushman's going to call in at 3 o'clock next week.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, and then you'll be after him at 4, so he's going to have to build it up for you. So.
Well, I can disavow everything that he says. No, that's not it. Negate.
Negate.
Well, I can negate everything he says.
Well, if you listen at 3, then when you come on at 4, you can say everything he said was wrong.
I just make a list of it. Just go down the list.
All right.
And this number 13, this was all wrong because this is the way it actually is.
All right.
Wonder who people will believe.
Oh, boy. I'm going to believe you. That's just the way it is.
Oh, my. Well, I appreciate the time.
All right.
I apologize again. That won't happen. Unless I can help it, it won't happen again.
I appreciate that, Sonny. You know, I knew something happened, so I'm going to get out of here. Thanks a lot for calling in, and I'll talk to you next week, and we'll find something else to chat about. Hopefully, we'll be talking about the World Series of Baseball.
I hope so. I hope the little boys win.
All right.
They're just such a really nice bunch of kids. They're 12 years old, most of them is, and they're just really nice kids.
What position does his great-grandson play, do you know?
He plays right field and pitches.
Okay. Well, that's important. All right. All right.
His name is Blake Osborne, and he's number 5.
All right. Well, we'll look for him then. We'll see what happens by next week then.
Okay, my friend.
Hey, thanks, Sonny.
To you then.
Take care, man.
All right, bye.